All right. Hi again. I'm Cal. I have with me Vas.
Hello.
Vas is a senior PM with the Service Fabric Engineering team, and he owns the API and the programming model. So every time you're using stateless service, stateful services, programming models, and actor, you're basically working on his stuff. And you're here today to talk about IoT.
IoT. All right. Internet of Things. More specifically, how to use Service Fabric to build IoT applications.
All right. One of the many ways, I'm assuming.
One of the many ways. Right. It's one of the things that always amazes me about Service Fabric, mm-hmm. is the versatility of it. Because it really is, it's an application platform. It's very wide open. Mm-hmm. And you can use this thing to build all kinds of different applications. IoT is just one example. So what we'll show you is a few patterns with Service Fabric. Patterns basically to build applications. And mm-hmm. IoT is kind of the context in which we're building this application. So that's the scenario that we're going to cover, essentially. So the first thing, there's a couple things we want to cover. The first is we want to talk about application types and instances. And the reason we're doing this is because this is a very, very useful way to construct your applications, to architect them, and to design them. It's a feature of the platform. It's a very important feature. It's kind of a core feature of the platform that you use. And it's also one of the most misunderstood features. So we want to spend some time to talk about this and then show you how to build applications using this feature. So this has to do partly with how you build and deploy applications, and then it also has partly to do with how you manage the applications. So there's this build and deployment time job that you do in order to get a service or an application up into Service Fabric, and it's composed of a few steps. So the very first step is, well, the first step actually isn't shown here. That's where you write your code and make sure it compiles. But once you have an application written, you package the application up into the Service Fabric application package format. Then you copy that package format up to the cluster, which is just a command that you run. And then you register the application with the cluster. And registration essentially means the application is now known to Service Fabric. We now know about your application, and we know its version, and we have it ready to go, but nothing's running yet in the cluster. So your application is not running. No executables have been created, and your services aren't actually running yet. Now, this registration step, this is essentially what you do during deployment time. Like when you're first deploying an application, or then later before you go and upgrade the application, you always have to register it with the cluster and give it a version. And what you're registering is what we refer to as an application type. And within each application type, you have service types. And the service types are basically the definition of the code that you write, okay? So when you go and register this application type, now you can do the interesting things with it. So now you can go and create instances of the application. Mm-hmm. You can go and upgrade an existing application to a new version. You can delete applications, mm-hmm. and all sorts of good stuff. So in looking at this build and deployment time processing pipeline, the last step is generally either you create or upgrade, but you don't actually have to do it at that stage. And so the application that we're going to show you today, the IoT application, it'll do something interesting where it creates one application at deployment time, but it doesn't actually create every application. So the other applications just get registered. And the reason we do that is so then we can go and create them dynamically. And that's the cool thing, is so you can create application instance dynamically. Mm-hmm. And this is what we call a multi-tenancy scenario in Service Fabric. So a little bit more about that. So here's an application type. And what we have in an application type is you have certain service types as well. An application type is version, service types are version. And then what you can do is you can tell Service Fabric, you basically go to the APIs, the management APIs, and you say, hey, Service Fabric, I want to create a new instance of this application type. And so we'll go and create that application. Now, we generally refer to these as named instances. And the reason we call them named instances is because they have this name up here. So you can say, I have Fabric / my app. And the name is a URI, and it's hierarchical. And so when you go and create an application, a named application instance, it is also empty because an application instance is really just a container. When I say container, I don't mean Docker container.
Yes, that's very important differentiation.
That's an overloaded term, unfortunately. It's a logical grouping is really what it is. It's a logical grouping for your services. So once you have an application, a named application created, you can say, I now want instances of my services that are defined within the application. I can then create instances of those. Okay. And of course, you can do this many, many times over. So from one app type, you can create multiple instances of that app type. So now I can create a new named instance and call it another app. So this is kind of analogous to object-oriented programming, where you define a class And the class is kind of like your application type or your service type.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can instantiate new objects, which are then the service instances or the named service instances. And so kind of like with in regular programming languages, when you go and create an instance of an object, you have to assign it to a variable, and the variable has to have a unique name.
Uh-huh.
And so that's kind of what we have here with the named service. Each instance of the service, each named instance, has to have a unique name. It's kind of like assigning it to a variable, and then you can address it that way.
And that name is something across the cluster. The difference is this is not just a program memory. You're doing that across a cluster of many, many, many machines.
Right, that's right, yeah.
The question I have is just to put a context around this. Why would people, me, consider designing my application this way? What are the different things I need to keep in mind while I'm doing that?
So the nice thing about doing it this way is if you have a situation where you have, say, some kind of a workload that's defined in a, you know, in a set of code that you wrote, mm-hmm. and you want to run multiple instances of it, if you're using this method and you're creating instances of the service, you're allowing Service Fabric to do a lot of the hard work for you,
mm-hmm.
because it's actually managing that instance for you. So I can just use the Service Fabric APIs to create it, and then we hand it over to Service Fabric, and Service Fabric will essentially say, okay, well, you've asked me to create this thing, now I'm going to manage it. So I'm going to find a place to run it, I'm going to keep it alive, I'm going to fail it over. And you don't have to write any code yourself to actually manage instances of the application or the services.
Okay.
Now, normally that would be a lot of code you have to write. Okay. So you have to figure out, where am I going to place the service to run? I have to write some API layer to expose all the functionality of, I want to create a service, I want to delete a service. Forget all that. Let Service Fabric manage it for you.
All right.
It's a great, easy way to do it. And this demo that we'll pull up in a little bit will actually show you this. So this is the first thing that we wanted to talk about, just to give an overview of how this feature set works, because we're going to make use of this in a little bit. So if we go back and look at a multi-tenant application, and this is also great, again, for multi-tenant applications here specifically, because you can define an application type, basically write some code, and you want every new tenant that comes to your service to go and run that code.
Mm-hmm.
A good example is in Azure, Azure SQL DB.
Mm-hmm.
So the SQL Azure is basically, it runs on Service Fabric, and it is basically an application type. So there's an application type called Azure DB.
Mm-hmm.
New user comes on and says, goes to the Azure portal and says, hey, I want a new SQL Azure database, please. And so we say, okay, so we go and create an instance of that application type. And then so every user now has their own instance of this application type. And that's how they run, that's essentially how they run SQL Azure. And then, of course, you can do cool things like, you can target which users you want to upgrade first over others and all kinds of stuff. That's provided by Service Fabric, the platform. Mm-hmm. So the guys writing SQL Azure or writing any other service on Service Fabric mm-hmm. don't have to worry about those problems so much anymore, because the platform then does it for you. So in this example, a multi-tenant application. So this is actually going to look exactly identical to the last slide we showed, except we're using real names this time. That's all it is. So imagine you have an application that represents a tenant workload, and it's made up of two services, a data service for doing some data processing, and a web service that hosts some endpoints for the user to interact with. And so when a new user comes along, you can basically just create an instance of that application for them, a named application instance, and then create instances of the services, and then now your user is up and running, and they can go and connect to that and do work. And then if you get a new user, you basically do the same thing. He gets an instance of the application. So that's kind of how that works. Okay. So that's just a brief overview of that feature set. Now let's talk a little bit about IoT specifically. We'll switch gears a little bit and just talk about IoT. And then once we're done talking about IoT, we're going to combine these two ideas together. So this is a typical IoT data flow. It's very simplified here, but just to give you a flavor of what it looks like, you typically have some devices out in the field. Devices can be anything. A lot of the time you'll have what's called a field gateway, which is kind of an aggregation. It's a computer that aggregates data from devices, and it can sit on site. So if you have devices in a building or something, you might have a field gateway that actually sits on site with those devices. It's optional, but it is a typical thing that we see. And then that data flows from that through into IoT Hub. And IoT Hub is, of course, an Azure service that we provide for ingress of device data. It can also make cloud to device calls, so actually two ways. And then from IoT Hub, you need, of course, the actual processing application. And this is the application you write, where you want to take in all this data from devices and then do whatever you want to do with it. So run analytics on it, you want to display it, whatever that is. That's the application you write, okay? That's sort of the processing part of it. So that's the general flow.
Mm-hmm.
The processing box actually should be a little bit bigger, because that's really where a lot of the work is happening. But you get the general idea. Now, so with IoT Hub and Event Hub specifically, now this is where Service Fabric comes into play. Okay, when you're writing that processing application, you have to think a lot about scale because IoT is really all about scale. You have a huge number of devices is generally what you expect. And when you have a huge number of devices, you have to figure out a way to be able to scale your backend, ideally horizontally, so that as you add new devices, you don't have to re-architect your backend to handle more devices. You should really just be able to scale it. Mm-hmm. Now, IoT Hub and Event Hub, for that matter, are actually kind of set up to do this on the device ingress side, the gateway, essentially, because those services are partitioned. So IoT Hub gives you this option to partition. And essentially what a partition is in IoT Hub is it's just this ordered sequence of events. So as device data comes in, it'll go to one of several number of partitions in IoT Hub. And you'll kind of get the sequence of events building up in the partition. It's similar to a commit log. And you'll have older events at the beginning and then newer events as we go along. Now, if we look at how this works in IoT Hub, there's always an offset that you get in this event stream, okay? And so the offset's a very important thing to remember. As you're writing data through in each partition, you have to keep track of where in that event stream you want to start reading from. This is what we refer to as the offset. Now with IoT Hub, you as a consumer of IoT Hub are actually responsible for keeping track of that offset somewhere outside of IoT Hub. And this is actually trickier to do than it sounds. So you have to keep track of this, and not just for one partition, but for multiple partitions. As you can see here in Event Hub, you're always going to have more than one partition because you want IoT Hub to be able to scale out. And now each partition actually has its own sequence of data, its own sequence of events, and they can be at different places at different times. They're not necessarily always going to be at the same place. And so now as you're writing your application and you want to consume events from these partitions, you have to keep track of not only multiple partitions, but the place in each partition where you want to start reading your events. And so now you have all kinds of problems, like if, say, you have a worker that's reading from a partition, and then the worker needs to fail over to a different machine because the VM is being taken down for upgrade or something. You have to go back and say, well, where in that event stream was I so that I can continue reading again? Because I don't want to start all the way from the beginning because I've already processed all those events. Mm-hmm. You know, IoT Hub holds data from like a week ago, and I don't want to be reprocessing all the way up to, you know, from a week in the past. So you need some way to do this. So what they did with IoT Hub, or well, I guess back with Event Hubs really, is they came up with this this kind of way of stitching a number of consumers together that they call Event Processor Host. And so Event Processor Host was really designed to work with stateless workers. So this is we're talking about a stateless world here. Where in cloud services, you had worker roles and web roles, but everything was stateless. Mm-hmm. So one worker role was no different from another worker role. Okay, so if I had a consumer per worker role, this doesn't work very well because you have to figure out, well, I've got a bunch of partitions in IoT Hub, and then I got these consumers and these worker roles, and then which partitions should the consumers actually go and talk to? So now your consumers have to somehow coordinate with each other to figure out, well, which partition should I talk to, because I don't want to read from the same partition you're reading from, because we're going to overlap and it's going to cause all kinds of problems. So now you have this issue of, because consumers have to somehow coordinate on this work. Then they also need a way to store their event offsets in the event stream that's coming in through IoT Hub. And so since worker roles are stateless, again, if you're consuming on one worker role and you fail over to another, your consumer wakes up and it looks around and goes, well, I've never existed before. I don't know what offset I'm on. I don't know what partition I was reading from. I don't know anything. I have no state. So what do I do? So this thing, Event Processor Host, was created, which is kind of this thin layer that runs on top of cloud services on worker roles that attempts to create some coordination between these consumers. And what it does is it saves offsets out externally to Azure storage. And it has this mechanism for allowing consumers to kind of take leases on the partitions in IoT Hub. So you take a lease on this thing, and you're reading from it. And then if you want to scale out, the idea is that you go and add a new worker role, and new consumers will eventually pop up on the new worker role when leases run out on the old worker role and things like this. So it eventually scales out, but you still don't have a concept of, I know that this one consumer is responsible for this one partition. They're all still very, very stateless. So that's a purely stateless world. So if we go into Service Fabric, now Service Fabric is a stateful world. And this is one of the key things that Service Fabric introduces that you don't really have anywhere else on any other platform, is stateful compute. And you'll notice the picture, maybe you didn't even see that I just switched the slides, but the picture actually looks very, very similar. So it's not a totally different concept. You still kind of do things conceptually in the same way, where I have a bunch of consumers on a single node or on a single VM reading from IoT Hub, and then when I need to scale, I add a new node, and then I try to essentially move some of the workloads off from one node to the next, and that's how I scale out. So I reduce the amount of work that one node is doing. The difference, though, is that in Service Fabric, we can do this with what we call a stateful service, which I'm sure you all have heard of at least once by now. And so the idea with a stateful service is a stateful service can be partitioned as well. And so if you look at this diagram here, you can see that we map one partition of a stateful service to a partition of IoT Hub. Now, the reason we can get away with this is because Service Fabric actually keeps track of a partition as a stateful entity. So one partition running on node one, if it fails over to node two, it is the same partition and it is stateful. So it knows when it wakes up, it actually has a memory. It's like when you wake up in the morning, you still remember your name and where you live and where your car is parked, usually. Same thing here. When a replica of a partition wakes up, it knows who it is, and so it knows what partition it is supposed to be reading from on IoT Hub. And mm-hmm. so then it can just go and do that. And it also has the offset information from the partition, the offset in the event stream. It has that state stored within it. So I actually don't need to persist this out to table storage or to Azure storage or anywhere else. I can just look inside my own set of state, and I can say, oh, okay, I was on partition 5 and offset X, and so I'll just continue reading from there. Mm-hmm. So it simplifies the whole thing quite a bit because you allow the platform, Service Fabric, to do all the management for you, and you don't need these extra external components to save your offsets. Okay, so with that in mind, so we have two concepts in mind here. We have this kind of basic flow of IoT, this IoT data flow from devices to a backend. And then on the Service Fabric side, we have these concepts of creating application types and instances and using stateful services to actually read and persist the state from your devices. So with that in mind, we can look at an example application, example architecture. And so here's kind of a generic overview of what a multi-tenant IoT application would look like. And so here on the left side of the slide, you'll see you have a bunch of devices from a bunch of different companies or users or whatever it is. They flow through IoT Hub or multiple IoT Hubs. And then they're going to go into some ingestion application, which then takes the data stream and sends it back to, or forwards it to the tenant that owns that device. Mm-hmm. So, and this, the whole idea of this is that I can not only add more tenants, but I can also add more IoT hubs. And the reason you do that is because you might overload a single IoT hub at some point if you scale to massive, massive sizes. You might end up needing a new IoT hub. Other reasons too, you might get one tenant that is just a very, very massive tenant with a huge number of devices, and they need an IoT hub all to themselves or something like that. And so this architecture allows you to scale that in both senses.
And this is a typical thing you see, right? Nobody uses a single event hub or IoT hub. People usually scale. I have a question here around like partition 3 that it was on the diagram. You're talking partition 3 to partition 2 and so on. Is there a relationship between the number of partitions on Service Fabric and the number of partitions on Event Hub? How are they related?
So it actually, you actually get to choose how you want to do that.
Okay.
In this particular example, we went with the route where one partition in Service Fabric maps to one partition in IoT Hub. Okay. And we did that for simplicity mainly. It's much easier to reason about if you just have a one-to-one mapping. And it turns out that works fairly well. You can also do multiple, you can have N number of IoT Hub partitions and X number of Service Fabric partitions, but now you have this problem of, well, I have multiple partitions on the Service Fabric side, or I have more partitions on the Service Fabric side and fewer on the IoT Hub, which means some of them will sit idle, and that's obviously not good. If you have a smaller number on the Service Fabric side, then you'll have partitions that are reading from multiple IoT Hub partitions, which again introduces a little more complexity. All things you can do, of course, but we find that it's a lot easier if you just go one-to-one mapping. Yeah, so one partition knows which partition on IoT Hub side it's responsible for, and that makes things pretty simple. And we'll see that actually in the code and in the demo here in a minute. In fact, why don't we jump to that now? So this is the overall architecture that we're looking at for this application. So the previous slide here, if I go back real quick, this is just kind of a logical, this is what we're trying to accomplish. This is what it actually ends up looking like when we architect the whole thing out using Service Fabric and IoT Hub. So again, you can see it looks fairly similar. You have the devices on one side, they come through IoT Hub, they go through a processing engine, and then finally they make it over to the tenants. And then the Azure storage that you see all the way on the right, this is not the offsets. This is kind of an optional thing you can do if you want to store long-term. If you want to store device data long-term, like you want a history of them and then you want to run analytics over it or do some queries over it, that's a good reason to go and use Azure storage or streaming analytics or Azure ML, machine learning, whatever you want to use to do kind of cold data analysis on the data, because you don't necessarily want to keep the entire history of all of your devices in your stateful services and service fabric because you're paying compute costs for those. So you're keeping them in memory and you're keeping them in disks on the VMs. And so you want to try to limit that so that the amount of capacity that you have that you're using on the VMs to store the state isn't that much greater than the amount of compute capacity you actually need, because it gets expensive to use compute VMs as a storage mechanism. Usually you don't want to do that.
Is this practice IoT specific or is it a general practice?
This is actually a pretty general practice. It happens to work really well for IoT. Uh-huh. But yeah, you can do this in a lot of different cases. It doesn't have to be IoT necessarily. It's a kind of a common event processing stream where you have a stream of data going through and you have multiple sinks for that data, right? And so the first sink might be a stateful service. And you store it in a stateful service because retrieval time is going to be really fast for you. So if you have high throughput requirements, if you have a large user base and need access to the data, for example, storing in a stateful service could potentially get you much higher throughput because you're literally reading straight out of memory, like a cache. As opposed to reading it from a database or external storage or something like that. So it's a very generic pattern that you can use. And we see this actually quite a bit. And it does happen to work very well for IoT, yeah. So in this particular example application, what you'll see on the screen here on the slides is that we have an admin service. We actually have three applications going here. We have an ingestion application. That's the partitioned one that reads from IoT Hub. There's a tenant application, which is what we talked about. Every tenant gets their own instance of this application all to themselves. And then we have this third one down in the bottom corner here called an admin application. And the admin application is the system owner of this. Whoever's running this multi-tenant application is using this admin IO, this admin application to dynamically at runtime add new tenants and add new IoT ingestion applications. So that's kind of how that works. So it's three applications in this whole system. And it's a little different maybe than what you're used to if you're just new to Service Fabric and you've played around with Visual Studio a little bit. What Visual Studio usually sets up is a single application with multiple services. This one goes in a little more complex direction where we actually have multiple applications now. So with that, let's jump into the actual code and we'll show you what this thing looks like. So I have this deployed already on my machine. And I'll show you here how the deployment actually looks. So what you'll see here is I have the three application types registered here, but I only have an instance created of the admin application. You'll notice the other two, I don't actually have any running named service or application instances of these two. And the reason is because we expect these to be created sometime in the future, not necessarily when I deploy. Because when I first go and deploy the application, I don't know who my tenants are, and I don't necessarily know what IoT hubs I'm reading from. So this is left up to the admin application to create at runtime. So we have a special build script for this, and it's not terribly it's not anything unusual, the build script. All it does is it takes the compiled application packages, it does the normal steps that I showed you earlier, which is copy and register, but then what it does is it only creates an application instance for the admin application. It doesn't create an instance of the other two. It leaves them alone. It just has the types registered. And so that's what you can see here. We only have an instance of this. Okay, now I can open up this is what the admin service looks like. This is just a basic web UI. And what you see here is the admin application, and here's the ability to add new IoT hub ingestion applications and new tenant applications. And this is a simple web app that I wrote. This isn't a Service Fabric feature by any means. This is just part of the application. So you can write something very similar to this. And so what we'll show you is we'll go and add an application, an ingestion application here. And so I have fields for a name and an IoT hub connection string, okay? And if I just click add, again, this is all my code that's doing this. When I click add, I make an HTTP request back to my own service. And then in that service is where I go and create the application instance, okay? And you can see here it's already up and running, and so it's ready to go. Now, if I go and look at the code, we'll see that this is actually fairly simple to do. So this is a simple web API application you're seeing now. We have a web service. This application has only one service. It's just a web service, which is stateless. Let me make the font size a little bit bigger in case you can't see that here. And so it's just one. It's one web service. This is using ASP.NET Core with a web listener server. And hopefully that'll be a little better. There we go. Okay, and this is just regular web API, so there's nothing really special here. We just do a little bit of bootstrapping down in the web service. You can see this is where we implement stateless service here. And in the stateless service, we just bootstrap basically a web host builder, and we're saying use web listener. So this is all ASP.NET stuff. If you're familiar with ASP.NET Core, then this should look pretty familiar to you. And so then this is just an MVC controller, a regular MVC controller. And here we have an action method. And so this is when I showed you that that UI where I said create a new application, this is basically what it hit. Mm-hmm. And so here you can see we're using the Service Fabric APIs now. We have this thing called Fabric Client, which is essentially your programmatic gateway into Service Fabric management tasks. And so from this thing, I can do all kinds of cool, crazy stuff with Service Fabric. There's very, very rich querying capabilities. I can create applications, delete applications. I can start application upgrades, et cetera. It goes on and on. All kinds of cool stuff you can do. And even if you're writing custom complicated build scripts or something, or build environments, if you're writing tasks, MS build tasks, and you're writing them in C#, you have all this rich capabilities available in C#. If you're not doing C#, if you're doing PowerShell, this is all available through PowerShell. If you're on Linux, this is all available through command line.
And you have a REST API for that.
And we have HTTP as well. Yes. If for whatever reason you can't use any of that stuff and you have to do it over HTTP, like you could do this from your mobile phone if you wanted to. You could log on through your mobile phone and say, please create an application now. Uh-huh. All that stuff works. Uh-huh. So you can see here we're just saying create a new application instance. And all I did was I passed in this application description, which really just has the name of the application I want to create. And the name contains a tenant in it. And then once the application is created, we go and create the service instance down here. And the service instance is where you define the parameters of the service. So here is the stateful service. I'm defining replica set size. I'm defining partitions. Okay.
This is as if I'm calling a PowerShell command to create a new app or a new service.
Pretty much, yeah. It's actually exactly the same thing. You'll see that all the parameters are very, very similar there. Yeah. Right. So once this finishes, then the application's up and running, and we can see that here in Service Fabric Explorer. I have what I named it hubs, and I've got a router service running, and you can see it's partitioned. Now, what I did is I created an IoT hub before we started this session, and I created it with 10 partitions, and you can just do that through the Azure portal. And you can see now my stateful service that's reading from that IoT hub, you can see it also has 10 partitions. And I just figured this out really dynamically. It's fairly simple. There's a event hub API call to say how many partitions does this IoT hub have, and you create the same amount. And so there you go. And so now that that's up and running, we can go back and we can create a tenant application. And so I'll create one. Let's create one for Cal. We'll call him Cal. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you one partition for your data service. Just one. Just one for you. And one web service instance count. Now the reason the partition count here on this data service, this is actually for you specifically. Now this doesn't have anything to do with IoT Hub necessarily. Mm-hmm. This is more about how big are you as a customer of mine or a tenant? How much scale out capacity do you need? So I can give you a larger partition count if I know that you are planning to scale to millions and billions and trillions of devices. I'll give you a larger partition count because the partition count is essentially that's the number that determines your scale. Mm-hmm. There's one thing I wanted to show you here real quick that we wanted to cover is when we're creating this thing, you notice we have two numbers that we essentially need to think about. We have replica set size, and then we have partition count. These are two very important numbers you have to think about in Service Fabric when you're doing stateful services. And the main thing to remember about these two numbers is when you're thinking about scale out capacity, how much do you want to scale, that's your partition count. Mm-hmm. When you're thinking about availability and how highly available do you want your service to be, that's replica count. That's the difference between those two numbers.
So replica count applies on the partition.
Exactly.
Not
right.
On the service.
Right. It's per partition. Yes, thank you. That's a very important point. Every partition has its own replica set. Mm-hmm. And the replica set is what provides high availability of that partition. And then the number of partitions is what provides the scale out.
I'm thinking of a scenario where a lot of people are doing similar solutions. Mm-hmm. I've seen some, you've seen some. We've probably seen a lot of people together.
Yeah.
One of the things people raised on is, can this service, this portal, run outside the cluster?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So how can they do that? What's like the easiest way to do that?
Are you talking about the web UI you're talking about here?
The management API?
You can access it from outside the cluster for sure. Yeah, absolutely. So this is again, because it's a stateless service, it's very similar to just running web servers on a set of machines. Mm-hmm. And so basically you go and you deploy. There's actually this, you can see this web service instance count that I did for the tenants. So the tenants can access their web portals from outside the cluster as well.
Mm-hmm.
And really the trick there is you just need to be able to expose the stateless service out through the Azure load balancer. And so as long as you open up a well-known port like port 80 and you set up your Azure load balancer to forward requests from the public internet into your cluster and onto the nodes where the service is running, then you can get access from outside. And you do that with stateless services. With stateful services, it's a little bit trickier. You don't actually have a way to expose a stateful service directly out through the Azure load balancer. And the reason is because, you know, we talked about partitioning with stateful services. There's multiple partitions. And so when a client wants to connect, it not only has to know which partition to connect to, but it has to kind of figure out what node is that actually on that I'm connected to, right? So there's an IP address and port combination it has to know. And there's no way for the Azure load balancer to actually forward traffic to the right to the right node, because it's going to kind of round robin or do some hashing to figure out what node. It's essentially trying to load balance. It's not actually trying to route. And the Azure load balancer doesn't really know anything about Service Fabric. It only knows that there is a set of VMs, and it should figure out how to send traffic to those VMs, and that's it. So if you're stateless, that's fine. You can do that. That's just like running a regular web server. But if you're stateful, you really can't do that very well. So that's why, in fact, with this tenant application, I can even go into your, I'm going to go into your tenant application here, into the web portal. That's why when we created this application, we actually have two services for Cal's tenant. You see there's a data service and a web service. And the data service is where I'm storing the event data. The web service is the portal. And the reason they're different services is specifically so that this one can be stateless and so that you can access it from outside the cluster. And so you can see here's your custom portal here. So if I go back to the admin service, I'll create one more. I'll create one for Haishi. I'll give Haishi two partitions. And then what I'm going to do is now we'll actually run this thing real quick. So I'm actually going to send data through. So I have this little console app. All this console app does is it just sends data into IoT Hub. That's all it does. But just to prove that this works, I have a few devices registered in IoT Hub. I have a thermostat and some barometers set up. So what we'll do is we'll go and send data from a device to Cal, not C, K-A-L. And the device is going to be the thermostat. Okay, so we'll just go and send him data. You can see that gets sent through IoT Hub, and then you can see in Cal's dashboard, he now got a message from the thermostat with a timestamp in it. And if you go and look at Haishi's dashboard up here, when this loads up, you'll see Haishi didn't get that event. And the reason is that we expect the device, when it sends data to IoT Hub, it's going to include a tenant ID in it, essentially, right? And so that's just how we architected this application here. And so here's Haishi's.
Zero event.
He's got nothing. Cal's got one guy here, and he's queued up for processing. So let me show you the code for this real quick. This is where the interesting magic happens. So here's that router service. This is the service that talks to IoT Hub. You can see this is just a stateful service, just a regular old stateful service. Now, here's what makes this really, really easy, okay? When you have this service class that you write, that you see here, Service Fabric is going to create an instance of this class for every single replica that comes up of the service. Now, let me show you a slightly different view of that. Here's a slightly different visualization of how that looks, okay? Now, here is the ingestion application here. Now, every one of these little blocks that you see is a replica of the ingestion service that talks to IoT Hub. These are all the replicas. And if I hover over one, you'll see it highlights the complete partition. And so this is what I was talking about. A partition is made up of a replica set. And it has three in it because that's what I asked for. And so as I hover over each replica, you'll see which partition it belongs to. Now, each one of these boxes is literally, Service Fabric is literally creating an instance of this class and running it. And that is what a replica is. And it gets placed on one of those nodes. Now, down below here, we have this run async method, which you might be familiar with. This is your entry point to the stateful service. Now, this run async method only runs on the primary replicas. And so if we switch back here again, you can see the slightly lighter boxes with the white outline. Those are your primary replicas. And so since we have 10 partitions, we have 10 primary replicas. So what I essentially have is I have 10 copies of this class running this method running on a 7-node cluster right now is what's happening. Okay, that's what's going on. And so this makes things really easy because these things are stateful. And so I can look, I can do some introspection in that service here. And you can see what I'm doing is I'm saying, for this partition, get me the partition info, and then I can grab my low key. And it turns out that when I created this partition service, I gave it a partition range, a key range, that matches what I have in IoT Hub, which is very simple to do. It's just 0 to 9. So I have 10 partitions. And then I can take that key down here below, and this is where I can connect to IoT Hub very simply. is I just create this Event Hub receiver here, and the Event Hub receiver is what allows me to connect directly to a partition in IoT Hub. And so when I create that, I can just pass it in the partition key. You can see in this Event Hub runtime info, I can grab all the partitions out. So this is my Service Fabric service partition key, and I'm just mapping that over to an Event Hub partition ID. And once I have that, I can go and create this Event Hub receiver. And then you see down here now, I'm looking for this offset. And this is the place in the event processing stream I was talking about. And so the very first time this service comes up, I'm not going to have an offset because I'm just getting started. And this is the very first time, right? So I'm going to say, well, I don't have a value, so I'm just going to create an Event Hub receiver here with just a date time UTC now. So I start at the current time. That's where I'm going to start processing. Now, every other time the service starts up, which will happen. Now, keep in mind, a service lifecycle or lifecycle of a partition of a service, the replicas tend to move around a lot. And in fact, we can even show you that here. If we go back to this view, you can see here I have node 7 disabled. And we'll show you what this means when we go and say that things move around. I'm going to go and enable node 7 here. This is also kind of a simulation of a scale-up or a scale-out situation. So imagine you're adding a new node.
Yeah.
Node comes up. There's nothing on it. It's being enabled. And then once the node comes up, what you'll see is we're going to start to move these replicas onto this new node. So we're essentially taking capacity. We're taking load off of these nodes and migrating it to this node so that everyone has more of an even load distribution. And that'll take just a minute or two.
Yeah, it takes time to do that. And that's similar to a node just being upgraded or just failed somehow and
exactly.
It came back online.
Yeah.
So you will see that the cluster is trying to rebalance.
Right.
Just before we go on, because this looks really cool, people are asking, this X-ray thingy, is it available somewhere?
Yeah.
Even if it's not supported, I'm guessing it's not supported directly.
No, this is my own personal pet project I have on GitHub. If you go onto my GitHub account, we can put a link up on that later.
Can you type it into there? Yes.
Yeah, I'll type it into there later. But yeah, you can definitely use this. It's open source. Now we're taking contributions, so you know if you want to add features to it, please do. It's built on an old version of Angular too, so watch out for that. But yeah, totally available, open source.
All right.
Have at it. So yeah, so this takes a little bit. Service Fabric is going to take a little while. There's basically an interval at which it runs its rebalancing algorithms. It's also running on one slow laptop here right now, so it might take a little bit. But we'll come back to it. The point is though, you'll see things start to shuffle around, and that's what we're talking about, the life cycle of the service. So this run async method that you saw up above, this run async method gets canceled and restarted numerous times throughout a service's lifetime. In fact, when you deploy a service into production, once you've deployed it the first time, you never actually really go and deploy it again. So Service Fabric has this idea of doing all these upgrades in place. So you don't have an idea of tearing down an application so that you can put up a new one or standing up a new one somewhere else and then doing a VIP swap or something. Everything's in place. It's always rolling upgrades, right? So this run async, as part of the service's lifecycle, run async gets canceled, starts up again, gets canceled, starts up again. This happens, as you said, during upgrades when we need to fail things over so that we can take down a node for upgrade or take down a service for upgrade, when we're doing rebalancing, all these situations. So it's just a natural part of a Service Fabric service's lifetime. Just a normal part of life. It happens. So really down here, you're only going to see, down here when you're looking for the offset, you're only going to see it not be there the very first time. Every other time, we're going to just grab the offset. And we're grabbing this out of a reliable dictionary here, you can see. So we just grab that out, and then we create the Event Hub receiver. And so this is really cool, right? Because it's all self-contained. When this run async code runs, I know what partition I need to connect to. I know where to start in my offset. It's all right here. And it's, 300 lines of code. Not too bad. Not too shabby. And so then once you have that information, you go and you just start reading from Event Hub receivers. And then it's just in a loop in run async. And here you can see now we're going to take the tenant ID and the device ID. We go and grab this out of the properties of the event data that's actually coming in. And we determine which tenant application to send it to. So we do this all very dynamically, right? So I know this name of the tenant application from what came in the device data. And from that, I can just send that data over to that tenant application. And so what I'm doing is I'm actually resolving the location of that data service directly. And you can see that down here. This is the tenant data service. And the tenant data service itself is also just another ASP.NET core application. And the way I communicate with it is over HTTP. So the tenant application, the data service is itself just a web API application that has some controllers again that exposes an API that's now internal only for other services in the cluster to talk to. Mm-hmm. And so other services can now connect to it over HTTP. And it's really It's as simple as creating an HTTP client, but you do have to do this resolution part in here, and I'm not going to go too much into depth in this, but you can see it on the sample here. This code's all public on GitHub as well. You do this loop of, I need to resolve where this service is, so I ask Service Fabric, where is the service with this name, since I have the tenant application name, mm-hmm. and then it will give you back an IP port and a basically URL to go talk to it. And then you just make an HTTP request to it, and so that's what you see here. This stream content gets sent to HTTP client, post async, and that's it, and then we just check the status code. So it's just HTTP communication between mm-hmm. services. It's pretty simple to do, really. Okay, so then we see the data flowing through.
Yeah, it's balanced already.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, look at that. So it went and balanced itself out. There are a couple idle secondaries here, but other than that, it's kind of balancing itself out. You can see it started to move things around a little bit. And so that's kind of how that works. Okay, great. So let's do something interesting now. We have a little bit of time left, and I wanted to show you something interesting that you can do with tenants. So a question that frequently comes up, so I'm going to go back to the admin application here. I'm going to go and remove Aishi, and I'm going to go and remove Cal. Sorry, guys.
No.
I know. So I'm going to remove these guys. Again, when I click remove here, by the way, this is, again, I'm just making an HTTP request to my own service. Mm-hmm. And then in there, I'm, again, using Fabric Client and just calling delete application. It's really that simple. Imagine the code you would have to write yourself if you wanted to do all this coordination, right? Cal's over here shaking his head.
I've probably done that before,
and I don't ever want to do it again, right? No. You don't want to have to deal with this stuff because it's hard. It's really, really hard. These are the application platform primitives that Service Fabric gives you, and it's so simple to do. It's almost scary how I can write 10 lines of code to create and delete applications and have them be resource balanced across a bunch of nodes in a cluster. Anyway, so we're going to go and delete those. Now, what we want to show is there's a situation that you might run into where you say, well, I have multiple tenants that come on board, and these tenants have different load requirements. Okay, so I have a tenant that maybe requires more compute capacity than another tenant, or something like that. And so maybe I want to do something like I want to give this tenant a node all to himself, for example. Okay.
So let's link that back to the cluster planning session where we said when we have different node types. Node types might be different hardware, and this is you saying, hey, I can use this different hardware for this guy. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the situations. There's actually a few ways that you can go about this. There's a few tricks you can do. We've seen people do isolation by node type, where they have different node types with different hardware, and they'll give their customers different tiers that they can go into. So a bronze tier, silver tier, or a gold tier. Mm-hmm. And the gold tier will literally be restricted to these larger size machines, and the bronze ones will be restricted to smaller size machines. Mm-hmm. So that's one way that you can definitely do it, yeah. There's another way that you can do it that I wanted to show you. It looks like my cluster is, my laptop is struggling a little bit here, so I may not actually be able to show this today. But the basic idea here is that we do it with what we call capacities and load metrics. Mm-hmm. And I'll probably end up pointing you guys back to the talk I did at Ignite to see how this works. My poor laptop is part of the problem doing these shows live is yes. Sometimes your laptops just can't handle it. But the basic idea is that you define capacities on the node, and you can say, and capacities are completely open-ended. It's really just a number. And a capacity can represent a physical capacity of the node, like memory or disk space or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it can also represent any virtual capacity you can come up with. So in my example, it was essentially job units. And a job unit is just something I made up, and I say that a node can handle 100 job units. And so then when I create a new application, I can specify, and I can actually show you, even though I can't show you the live demo, I can show you what I have in PowerShell here, how to create these things. And you can see these are the same commands I showed you in C#. I'm just doing them now in PowerShell, just saying new Service Fabric application and new service. And down here, what I can do is I can supply these metrics, and this is the job unit I was talking about. So I had already defined ahead of time a job unit capacity on the cluster, and you can see these here. If you look in here, you can see I have these capacities defined here. So here's mm-hmm. a job unit. Each node has this capacity defined. So when I go and create a service, I can say, well, this particular customer is going to get 25 job units because I know he's a smaller customer. And Service Fabric will go and place those. And then I can create customers with varying numbers of job units. And then when you have a very large, this massive tenant that comes along and says, I need nodes dedicated to myself. So you can allow Service Fabric to do this for you on your behalf. All you have to do is specify when I create this when I create the service with this metric, I can say that, well, it's going to get 100 job units. And basically what that tells Service Fabric is, okay, I need to find a node that has 100 units of job units available on it, okay?
Because it's like booking the entire first class on a flight.
Exactly, yeah. I gotta find a plane that has all of first class available. Now, generally, that's hard to find. You're probably not going to find a flight that has all of first class available. Mm-hmm. And similarly, in a multi-tenant application, you're probably not going to find a situation where, oh, here's an empty node, because Service Fabric doesn't want empty nodes. We want to keep things balanced, right? So what do you do? Well, Service Fabric is actually pretty smart about this. What it's going to do is it will find a place to put this large job unit by moving all the smaller job units around, okay? So it's going to scale, it's going to kind of balance mm-hmm. things out in the cluster, essentially make room. So we're going to take this small guy and move him to this node, and this small guy and move him to this node, balance those guys out, and then plop this huge guy down in this node all to himself, and it's going to kind of balance him out. Mm-hmm. And you can keep doing that as long as you have room to place new things, and that's the really cool thing. And then once you get to a point where you're then out of capacity in the cluster, where you don't have enough capacity for that particular metric, if you go and try to add a new tenant, Service Fabric will complain at you. It'll say, well, you're trying to add a tenant with 100 job units. I don't have 100 job units anywhere. Go away. Error. And it puts up an error for you. Okay. And then at that point, once you're out of capacity within the cluster, that's when you start scaling the cluster out, adding more nodes with more capacity, and then you can increase the capacity that way.
So, and that basically helps you running a system like that for multiple customers, mm-hmm. multiple IoT hubs. At the same time,
exactly. Right. So you can do it all at the
without,
same time.
Without having to worry about activation code and resource balancing and all that stuff.
That's the cool stuff. And those are really the hard problems to solve. Uh-huh. That's the really hard stuff. And it's the hard stuff that, as an application developer, you don't want to spend all your budget developing that infrastructure stuff. You mm-hmm. look to platforms to do that, and that's kind of the stuff that Service Fabric provides. We kind of call them scale-out primitives for partitioning. We call that scale-out primitive. The clustering technology, that's all, you know, application management primitives. It's a lot of tools. It's like a big tool set that you get to build these applications in all these really cool ways that you never could before. So before you were able to do, you know, an IoT hub ingestion application on cloud services, sure. Mm-hmm. But you were limited in what you can do, and you had to rely on other software like Event Processor Host to do some of the coordination for you. And even that, you know, it worked well, but it was limited in scope. It just did that one thing. And then when you had other problems, like this multi-tenancy thing, for example, how do I now create multiple tenants? That became a little more difficult because you didn't have a platform to help you manage those things. You just sort of you're on your own. You had to figure it out. You might spend 3/4 of your development time just solving that one really hard problem. So now you have Service Fabric to solve a lot of those problems for you, which is really cool.
That's good stuff. Now, will you post the links to the code and everything online?
Absolutely. I will put it in the chat box, I think is what I'll do. Yeah, if you guys are still...
We are still in there. Just like scrolling up.
Oh, great.
Now, thank you. And
fantastic.
Thank you, Vas, for being here.
Absolutely.
I also appreciate you refer to Connect. Ignite
yes,
talk.
That's right.
So if you can put a link just for people to have a bigger view of
definitely. I believe that's still available publicly. I'll double check. That's a talk that Jeffrey Richter and myself gave at Ignite in Atlanta just last month, so I'll point to that.
All right.
Sure.
Again, thank you very much, and stay tuned in 10 minutes for the next session.